When you say yes to others, make sure you are not saying no to yourself. Paulo Coelho. You're listening to Podnuts Pro, your podcast for business IT support. And now, your host, Marvin B. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Podnuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B., coming at you live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where it is once again hot. And hot in the sense that I love it. I do not want to be anywhere where it is cold. But that is where we are. But let's get to the show. That's what you want to hear about. Podnuts Pro is your podcast for IT business support, where we help you run your business better, smarter, and faster. We talk about products. We share stories and tips. That is going to be no different tonight, as I have a great first-time guest. You guys are going to love her. Diana Giles from Skyline IT Management is in the house, and we are going to have a very interesting topic this evening. But before we do, let's go ahead and get the housekeeping out of the way. Of course, you are watching us live here. If you can see me, we broadcast every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on Facebook and the YouTube. And if you are catching us by audio, you're either doing that through your podcatcher or you have gone to the page podnutspro.com where you can see the video and play the audio. At any time, you can also find some other things on the site there, old past shows that you may want to listen to. Just simply go to the episodes page, type in what you want to hear, type in the guest you want to find, and you'll be taken directly to the episode. You can also support the show there. Click on support, and that will bring you to three different links. You can support us with a donation to PayPal. You can buy me a coffee, or you can join us through Patreon. Any of those things you can do. And of course, if you click on store, you'll be taken to Amazon, where any purchase that you do is normally priced to you. We get a little bit of a kickback here to help us do the show, keep things running, and bring you great and exciting guests. I do want to say hello to people already in the chat. We have a full house this evening. Mr. John, how are you? And oh, Thomas, Mr. Bull, who is going to be a guest next week on the continuing series of Summer Tech. Tom and Jason Miller are going to be joining me as guests next week. Thank you for joining in, Tom. I hope you have your outline ready. So let's do one other quick announcement. I did mention last week that I will be attending TechCon Unplugged, your conference brought to you for techs by techs in Chicago, Illinois, September 17th through the 19th. This is being presented by our good friends over at MSP Unplugged, Jeff, Paco, and John. And it is going to be a fantastic event. Again, Friday, September 17th through Sunday, September 19th. There's going to be nice vendors there. The page has grown since I have last looked at it. So if you head over there, you can just simply scroll. You don't have to click, click, click. Just scroll down. You'll see all the vendors there, Huntress, Acronis, Datto, and others. There are going to be some fantastic things. And just announced today, they are going to be adding a Microsoft 365 boot camp session Friday afternoon from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m., the session is included in the price of the ticket, but it is limited to 50 seats. So this is a full boot camp session with best practice deployment, security, and usage tips for anyone using Microsoft 365 or for those who are getting started on the thing. The session is being led by Matt Lee, an industry authority. Matt Lee is a CISSP and a CCSP. He is the director of technology and security at a company called Iconic IT. And I don't know the company Iconic IT, but I know one of the companies that was a part of that merger. Iconic IT is a conglomeration of, I think, 4 or 5 tech companies. I worked with one of them down here in Florida that is a part of that. They have been a fantastic company there. So Matt Lee is going to be leading that discussion. So if you haven't got your tickets, head over to TechCon Unplugged. You can still get them. You'll also have the opportunity to purchase a room. Well, not purchase. You're going to rent it at the lovely A-Loft Chicago O'Hare. That is right near the airport. So you're not going to have to grab an Uber or a bus or a train to get into downtown Chicago. It is pretty much right there. It is a nice boutique hotel. So you're not going to, have all of the extraneous things that some of these grand hotels try to give you. It is there. You are going to sleep. You're going to have sessions, and it is going to be a great weekend. So again, September 17th through the 19th, Chicago, Illinois, the 2021 annual TechCon Unplugged. I will be there. Oh, I should probably mention this. I'm also going to be doing a session. Jason Miller and I are going to be doing sessions on Sunday. We are going to be doing the how to design and set up a network for your client and best ways to document client networks so others can troubleshoot. So Jason and I will be doing that at the show, and you should come watch. Pay attention. All right. Let us do this. Let's go ahead and, man, we got a lot of stuff today. I got a lot of paperwork. So why don't I go ahead and bring on our guest? As I mentioned earlier, Diana Giles, the owner of Skyline IT Management, has been in the industry for over 20 years. So she is just like us in the industry, very knowledgeable. And I'm sitting here looking at some notes that I'm going to ask her about. But let me go ahead and bring her on so that I can surprise her with that. Diana, how are you?
Hi, I'm great. How are you, Marvin?
I am doing good. Look at your little professional room there.
Yep, that's my, this is the HQ or command central, as my husband calls it.
Oh, so is that's the home office, I presume?
Yes, yes.
All right. So, Diana, you've been doing this for over 20 years.
Yes, I've been in IT since the 90s. I originally, it didn't take me a couple of years after I started working after graduating from college with a business degree to realize that I enjoyed being the person in the office that people came to for tech questions when the tech guys weren't around. I enjoyed that more than my other job, my real job. So it was time for a change where I was. And I thought, if I'm going to leave, I'm going to pursue kind of what I want to do. And so I took an entry-level position with Teleflora, and they had a multi-user Unix-based system that, it was used by particularly large florists around the country. And so I started there, eventually began traveling for them, doing installations and training. And then after a while of being there, I had the birth of my first son, and then very shortly after that, my second son. And so I stayed home with my kids. But, once you're in tech, people tend to know that they can call you for help. So I eventually just made it official and started an LLC in 2004. And it was called the Computer Monkey. And then I, eventually in the last few years, I've kind of made the transition, or I'm trying to make the transition to MSP. So I'm pretty much a hybrid break-fix MSP still. But that started a couple of years ago after I went to my first IT conference. I kind of just did things all on my own. I never even talked to other peers. And really going to that conference just opened up a whole new world to me. I learned, a bunch of things I didn't know as far as just the running of the business and, right. And the MSP model. So,
okay. Can we ask what the name of the conference was?
Yes, it was the ITO Compass Conference in Chicago.
Okay.
That was the first one.
All right. That was part of Lori Tishnai.
Yes.
We call her Tsunami in our circles. She was a part of a conference that we started out called the Unconvention. And the Tekton Unplugged also grew out of that as well. So all the branches coming from that tree there.
Yeah.
So Tsunami, I need to talk to her. I haven't talked to Tsunami in a while. So let me ask you this. Now, you already went ahead and mentioned that you initially named the company the Computer Monkey.
Yes.
So, of course, I got to ask, what kind of a name is the Computer Monkey, and why did you pick it?
Well, okay, you may remember that back in the 80s, I think there's a computer virus called the Computer Monkey. So I don't know if it was a good name or not. Yeah. But I don't know. I was trying to think of a name, and, you know, being the kind of geeky tech person, I'm not the creative one in the family. My husband is the creative one. And I was trying to think of a name, and he said, what about the Computer Monkey? But again, I have to kind of couple that with his nickname for me since, like, we were dating was Monkey. So that's kind of how it happened.
A little inside stuff there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm not going to travel down that road. We can talk about that off air as about why he would have a nickname of Monkey for his girlfriend.
I don't know. It was just a pet name, you know.
All right.
How those things go.
So you mentioned that you are starting to make the transition from the regular break fix. I'm assuming you did, you know, residential, small business.
Exactly.
And you're making the transition to MSP. So did that prompt the name change to Skyline IT Management?
Yes, just because I really wanted to, and I still do have residential clients. I even have managed residential clients in my MSP program for home. But I just thought I needed a name that was not only more business friendly, because I really did want to kind of move more into small business and, you know, for focus on people who are really wanting to build a cloud office. And so that was one of the reasons. Also, I picked Skyline because I was trying to, you know, kind of reflect where technology is going and kind of focus on the cloud. So
nice. Okay. Can I ask you about a side gig that you're doing?
Oh, yeah.
Another website that you're running called Sensible Cyber Parenting.
Yes. Yes. I'm happy that you asked about that.
All right.
That came out of, sadly, situations where through my business, I was called in by families to come in after the fact, after they had discovered that they'd had a child who was not just, you know, these were not situations where necessarily they just stumbled upon pornography. These were situations where they were actually having a problem. In one case, particularly that struck me, I had to try to lock down as much as possible a college student. He was going off to college and had been dealing with that and wanted to be accountable and wanted things to be, you know, to protect him as much as possible. Because he truly was, you know, having, I don't know if you want to go as far as to say addiction, but certainly abuse of it. And so in those situations, I started realizing just, you know, how really that can impact families so much. And it goes on down the road. I mean, it can affect people's relationships later on. And in doing, you know, talks at various conferences and parent night events, I ended up talking to some people, and a lot of them were gentlemen who had actually started their problem with pornography started back before the internet with just, you know, magazines. And so it just hit me that, you know, how much worse it is now. And so I really just started it as it's just a website that parents can go to and find information to help them figure out the best ways to protect their family. And that's why I started it.
So one of the things that I found, or I shouldn't say that, my research team found it and brought it to me, and you've done a couple of videos, and it was more about helping parents who were trying to struggle with how to, like you said, protect their children. And it was coming from the mindset of, you know, a lot of times it's not the kid's fault that these things happen. A lot of times, you know, there's so much out there that is, you know, thrown at them, whether it's, you know, cigarettes and drugs and sex and this and that at that. A lot of times it's by accident that these things happen, and parents, you know, feel bad, like, what did I do wrong? And they didn't do anything wrong.
Right, right. It the majority of the time, the first time that kids stumble onto, you know, that kind of content is by accident. They, you know, they might have heard a word on the playground that they don't know what it is, so they go home and Google it. Or even you know, more accidental than that, they just happen to type in a, you know, the URL of Disney wrong. And yeah, these bad actors, I would call them, you know, buy domain names that could be a misspelled, you know, name of something that you would normally get to. And it's majority of the time, the first time, it's by accident. They're not, because what's in those cases, and the particularly sad cases, is when they're so young, they're not even looking for that because they don't even know that is a thing. You know, if, you know, a 16-year-old going to look for it is different, but an 8-year-old just stumbling on it is really rough.
Right. All right. Well, I just wanted to say great job that you are doing that. And I like what you're doing, and hopefully it's making a difference.
Thank you. I hope so. It's just a, you know, it's just there for people to go to and find information about how to best layer on. I mean, it really is. It's kind of like security with what we do. Layering is really the best approach. And every family and every situation is going to be different because of ages and devices and all of that. But it's just it's a resource out there. I wish I spent more time on it than I do. I get busy with my other things with, you know, Skyline and I feel like I neglect that sometimes, but I try to keep it up to date as much as possible.
So. Well, from what I can tell, you're doing okay. So right on. All right, let's go ahead and transition. And before we get to our big topic, of course, we have to go in the news. So, Diana, you have been around long enough that the announcement that came out last week, Microsoft has been doing a bunch of research to bring back more emojis and animated stickers, and they have said that they are going to be bringing back their iconic but polarizing virtual assistant that first appeared in Windows 1997. Do you know who that is?
Clippy.
Clippy. Yes, the small paperclip to help Microsoft Office users. Yeah, that was given the boot by Office 2007. So apparently they released it last week for one day and did a survey and said that if it received 20,000 likes on Twitter, that it would replace the paperclip emoji in Microsoft 365 with Clippy. So it's coming back, although it's not going to be popping up down in the corner like it always did in the past. So did you like Clippy?
I did. I actually have a really funny, pretty relevant Clippy story.
Yeah.
I can wait and tell it later, or I can tell it right now.
Go ahead and tell it now. We don't follow a format here.
Okay. So my oldest son graduated from college a couple of years ago, and his senior year when he was looking for a job, he ended up interviewing with Microsoft. And one of the things throughout that process, in the end, he had to do a presentation. And his presentation was on why they should bring back Clippy.
Really?
I kid you not. Yes. And of course, you know, it was just all about them being creative and getting through the presentation and, you know, so they could see they could communicate and all of that. It wasn't that serious of a presentation, but he got the job.
Wow.
And
nice.
So, yeah, he doesn't work at Microsoft anymore. He works at Axon now, but. Helped him land the job. Clippy helped him land the job.
Maybe they found that sitting around in a drawer somewhere, and that's why they decided to do that.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the one story that everybody loves to hear. Florida man. So, a Florida man told police that he was teaching it a lesson when he was spotted abusing an alligator. So, they didn't actually announce his name, but I sure wish they had. So a gentleman in Daytona Beach was arrested when he threw a live alligator that he had stolen from a miniature golf course onto the roof of a beachside cocktail lounge. The officer then saw the man take the alligator by its tail hit it against the awning of the building, throw it to the ground and stop on it twice. The man is from Homestead, Florida, which is down here by me. He was taken into custody and charged with possession and injury of an alligator, unarmed burglary of an occupied dwelling, theft, and criminal mischief. That's just insane and stupid, I think. That is your news, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Let's fade out the music here. All right, Diana. And later, you'll, of course, have the option to challenge Florida Man or answer a random question.
Okay, that'll be tough.
Okay. All right. So let's now have a chat about our topic. And it was an interesting topic. Now, first, we should tell everybody. So I've known you for just a little while now. You became friends with a friend of mine out in Oklahoma, Chris Meraz. And I believe you guys have done some work together, have you not? Or just chatted a few times?
Yeah, okay. We've met and kind of talked over, you know, just talk tech. And he organized a meetup. And so we all got together, some of the other techs in the area. And then COVID hit, so we haven't done it again.
Okay.
We need to do that.
All right. So our topic, I don't know if we're going to call it really the power of no, but just the whole overall concept of being able to say the word no. We are in a weird little industry where it seems as though we always feel like we have to say yes in order to keep the business or keep the customer happy. And then we complain about it after the fact. So help us out in understanding the power of no.
Okay. Yes. This just, you know, came to me when I was thinking about the topic, and it's just something I've kind of had to work on myself. And so maybe that's why, but, you know, coupled along with no is also fear. I mean, I think they, you know, they kind of go together. We either don't want to tell someone no, you know, for one thing, I think it, at least my experience and from the people in tech that I know of, the majority of us really do like to help people. That's, you know, something that we have in common. Obviously, you know, we like to make money doing it too, but we do genuinely like to help people. And so in that case, it can be hard to say no to things. If somebody's, you know, asking you for help, but you don't really feel like it's the right fit for you, it's hard to say no to that. It's also hard to turn down business. You know, it's one of those things where you feel like, well, if I turn down business, you know, why am I saying no to that? You know, it's money in my pocket. I should do whatever I can, right, to grow my business. And it's out of fear in that way also that we will say no. So sometimes it's about not saying no out of fear. And then when you want to avoid saying no out of fear, like, for example, this podcast. When you asked me to do the podcast, I was a little fearful, and I kind of said no, but then I thought, no, that's the wrong reason. We don't want to say no because of fear, right? So and the more I thought about the topic, the more stuff I thought of that I thought would be good to talk about. So
okay. So, of course, we talked about the concept that everybody tries to drive home from us. You know, the customer's always right. Never tell them no. But I've learned very well to tell customers no. Now, there's a way to do it, a right way and a wrong way. So let's start with that as a concept. How have you addressed the process of being able to tell a customer no, whether it's, you know, for things that you don't want to do or can't do or things that they just are thinking about in a completely wrong way?
Right, right. Well, if you also have to remember that there are different types of no. You know, there's no that's an absolute no, no matter what. And then there's a no, well, okay, unless these certain requirements are met, and that kind of thing. So depending on the situation, the no may not necessarily be, you know, set in stone. But one way that I've found that not only helps when it comes to telling a customer no, in certain circumstances, but also kind of, I think also, is a way to really show your standards. And that is that I say, I'm sorry, I cannot do that for you. Let's say somebody, you know, they don't need a backup. They think they don't need a backup, right? And so I don't do
everybody
that.
Thinks they don't need a backup.
Yeah, they don't. Well, I mean, and that's a deal breaker for me. I mean, on a managed client, they will have a backup. And if they don't want to have a backup, then they're not the right client for me. And so it's, I let them know that, you know, it's just the standards. I adhere to best practices, and I have to protect myself and keep my standards high because of my reputation. And so, you know, to me, a lot of these no cases that I've been thinking about, a lot of it is putting it on somebody else. Like we told our kids when, you know, they were teenagers, if they need to blame us, blame us. You know, just tell it, your parents won't let you. Your parents won't let you. So I blame it on my policies, my standards, or, you know, that kind of thing. And that kind of softens it a little bit, I think. That's, you know, that's one case where an example of saying no. There's also, you know, the kind of thing that's going to help you weed out a bad client. I mean, keep you out of an unprofitable situation. And so sometimes no is just a simple no. I'm sorry, we're not a good fit, that kind of thing. So that softens it a little bit. But in the conversation, if you're having the right conversation up to the point where you're getting ready, you know, they're getting ready to sign a contract, a lot of these things have already been established and you know whether they're going to be a good fit or not. At that point, then it's just a matter of listening, you know, to yourself. If you feel like it's not going to be a good fit, to not proceed.
Right.
But that's now, easier said than done. I know.
Okay. So let me ask now. So as you're making this transition into being an MSP, are you doing full contract? Are you doing a master service agreement? Are you just doing a statement of work? How are you doing that?
Now, I have a managed service agreement. I mean, it was, you know, done by my attorney, and, you know, I've got a couple of, I wouldn't say versions of that, but, you know, depending on what services they need, it's stipulated in that.
Okay. So. All right. Now you mentioned, you know, telling customers where our policies, you know, are the reason we have to do this or the reason we can't do this. One of the things that I just had a talk with on Monday with a medical office is I didn't even have to say anything about our policies. I'm like, well, the law requires you to attempt to be HIPAA compliant. So I'm not going to risk my business just because you don't want to do something. So that's certainly a way to throw it off. And in the age of ransomware, you know, just being a stand-up business and saying, look, you're going to expect for us to protect you. And the way that I can protect you is A, B, C, D. This is the way it is. Now, we may have, you know, a big A, a big B, and a little C, you know, or little A, big B, big C, you know, something like that in terms of flavor. So it's always easy to push, you know, I don't want to say the blame, but it's all a matter of the responsibility. And, you know, where does the buck stop?
Right, right. And no matter what they say, I mean, if they say, oh, it's okay, we don't need a backup, we don't need that extra layer of, you know, security, then if something happens, they're going to forget they said that.
Right.
And they're going to be blaming us. So, yep.
All right. Did you, so that's from a customer perspective. What other areas were you thinking of, you know, where no is a big thing?
Yeah, well, and this is, I guess, also related to the customer, but it also has to do with fear. You know, I had a situation where a client, and they're a very long time client, and they're not my biggest client, but they're a very long term client, and I didn't want to lose them, but they had some changes in the organization, and had started becoming extremely slow to pay. And so they were months behind, repeated, you know, even though I'd repeatedly, you know, kind of prompted and reminded and all of that. And I finally, and this, I consider this kind of a no, but I eventually just said, you know, I'd like to continue our relationship, but if, you know, we can't get this resolved, then I'm going to have to give you your information. I always make it very easy for my clients to fire me. I mean, I don't think, you know, if they want to fire me, I'm not the one that's going to keep their stuff hostage or anything like that. So, you know, I'll be happy to turn over your things to you, your passwords and everything. And they have that anyway, actually. But it was one of those things where I was really scared to do that because I don't, you know, I really don't lose clients much, especially I haven't, you know, lost any of my managed ones because I haven't had them that long. But I didn't want to do that. I was really afraid of losing them. But I thought, well, it doesn't matter because I'm not getting paid anyway. Right. So, and all it took was just, you know, I said something and approached it like that. And then I immediately got, you know, I think it was like 3 or 4 months of back payment right away. So that was something, again, with fear, right? You know, I didn't want to, I was scared to do it, but it was the right thing to do. And you just have to kind of move through that fear because it's holding you back.
Well, it's not just that it's the right thing to do. It's standing up for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, you deserve to be compensated for the work that you did.
Right.
And if they are going to be a stand-up reputable business, then they're going to do that. Now, of course, you can't really say that to them. You
know? Yeah. Right. And they'd had some change of leadership and, you know, that kind of thing. And I just hadn't, I mean, I've been very fortunate. I don't usually have problems with payment. You know, I've never even had a bad check given to me. I mean, you know, nothing like that. So it was just new territory for me.
All right. We've had one of those. It's been interesting. So we've sent 2 people to collections.
Oh,
they're not our clients anymore. That was years ago. And we had one client that was going through a partner breakup. It was a company. There were 3 partners and 1 was leaving and they were paying their bill in thirds.
Oh,
so we were getting 2/3 of the payment, but not the third third. And then I had to tell them, look, I don't care who pays, but these bills have to be in full or else we're going to have to stop supporting you. And it's, you know, I can't keep paying to provide the services to you. And so we had that situation done. And then this is sad. They said, oh, can we do one of those e-checks? And I'm like, all right. It's the first time we'd ever done an e-check, called the bank, and the bank's like, yeah, just do this, this, and that. Got the check. 2 days later, it was pulled right back out. And I said, okay, we're not doing that again.
Oh. Yeah. So,
I mean, it is not the e-check's fault. It's the partner who, thank goodness, is gone. We don't have to deal with them anymore.
Right. Yeah, and that was just one of those relationships that needed to be dissolved. I mean, you know, unfortunately, we get into those situations. And sometimes it's I think, a way that you have to kind of stand up for your staff and employees. If you've got a client who is either like extremely demanding and they're trying to go above, you know, whatever your agreement with them is and what they're trying to do, what you're agreed to do for them, or the way they treat your staff. You know, there's just certain things that, and we all have to decide what that is. What is the line that you don't cross? And if a client crosses that, you know, I've been very fortunate. I haven't had that situation on this side, but I've worked for a company, you know, where that was not the case. And, you know, the loudest, biggest clients could just run roughshod over everybody and treat, you know, people, you know, cuss them up and down. And so I think if you decide whatever that line is that you are not going to allow to be crossed, and then you stand up for your staff, I think you're going to generate loyalty with your employees. You know, if you don't let them be abused, I mean, they shouldn't be abused by unruly clients, right. Let's say.
Yep. So. Now, you've been doing this over 20 years, and you made the comment earlier that you make it easy for the clients to fire you. Have you ever fired a client?
No, I haven't. I have not. It's easier on the break fix side. There have been a couple of people I haven't returned calls to.
So,
But on purpose. But those were kind of unique situations. And but on the, you know, managed side, no. But you know, I've only been doing managed a couple of years. So.
Okay.
But I've had, you know, this client, like the one I was talking about before. I mean, I've had them since pretty much the beginning. They just weren't managed. I mean, I was their person. I was the, you know, they always called me for their IT, but I didn't have them on a, you know, monitoring and maintenance kind of plan.
Okay.
It was as needed.
All right.
Projects and such.
I ask that because when you talk about standing up for yourself and not letting a client bully you and stuff, I did fire a client.
And yes, I've heard your story.
You've heard the story. Okay.
Yeah. Good for you. Cause it's just not, you know, it just has to be done sometimes.
All right. So I'm going to take a little detour here.
Okay.
So what's in your stack?
Oh, you mean as far as the actual brands or just
if you feel comfortable, you don't have to name them, but you know, what are you using for your tools, your RMM and all that stuff?
Well, I use Datto, RMM and Autotask for PSA.
Okay.
So, and I did not start out that way. I blew through a couple right at first, and I'm very happy.
Okay. You know.
So, I enjoyed the podcast a few weeks ago where you were talking about tools because I related a lot to that discussion. So,
well, and not because of that episode, but because I've been doing some stuff myself, I actually just went through the demo for Datto RMM. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I'm going to pull the trigger yet, but I did look at it but just the RMM, not the Autotask portion. So are you doing the full integration, Datto RMM, Autotask?
I do, yeah. Right. Now, you know, both of those applications are so robust. You know, I it's probably a drop in the bucket what I do with it compared to what I could do. And I'm still learning. Right. I got a book. I got Chris Tim's, book.
Okay.
On the PSA profitability.
Yep.
Not too long ago. He's a pretty good PSA Autotask PSA expert. And so I'm gonna go through that book and really try to, because I know I need even more automation. I need just to make things easy since I am sole proprietor. I have people I outsource to for things, but it's still basically just me. So I need that as much as possible.
Okay. So Chris and Rayanne do that PSA show. Do you listen to that?
I do. Yes. Right. And I'm in there's a Facebook group for that. I'm in that too.
I probably should be, but I'm in too many groups, so I can't keep up. All right. Yeah. So who did you dump to go to Datto?
Well, okay. I started out with Synchro. That was
really
one that all the advice, you know, like I was mentioning, everybody likes to help everybody. So yeah. I had tons of advice and tons of people after I actually got to know some other techs. Because like I said, I had just been sort of just doing this thing all by myself. And, you know, why would I talk to other techs? You know, they're competitors of mine. But, you know, I eventually realized there's enough business for us all. And I was making friends with people from around the country, you know, too. So they were all very helpful. Everybody was telling me, you know, well, this is the best one. This is, you know, and so many people really did like Synchro. It just wasn't intuitive enough for me. I don't know. There's just something about it. I know it's improving all the time. And I know everybody, I mean, I know there's a ton of people that really like it. And then I moved to Ninja.
Okay.
And Ninja was okay. I mean, you know, I thought I would stick with that until I had the data. And I was using, I guess I had, Autotask was my first PSA. Like I started out with an RMM. And so then once I got Autotask, I guess, you know, I had a Datto RMM demo.
Right.
And then I thought, okay, I need that.
All right.
I've been happy with it.
Good. Good. All right. Are you using Datto for any backup stuff?
No, that's not true. Cloud continuity, I do. The cloud. I don't use any of the hardware, the Datto. It's a little pricey for a lot of my clients.
Okay,
so,
I get that.
They're just small, you know, smaller businesses. So, you know, I love the cloud continuity is great, but I'm not using the Alto or whatever.
Okay.
And as far as... I'm a Malwarebytes person. I've used Malwarebytes Premium since way, 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 way back. And so I still have some people on that if they're not managed. But I use the endpoint protection for all my managed.
So you're using the full endpoint? What is it their thing called? The cloud thing?
Yeah, OneView.
Okay. Mm-hmm. How do you like that? Because I haven't jumped on board with that, and I had to apologize to Alex the other day.
Yeah. No, I like it. I mean, it's I've always been a big fan of their products, and I like the one pane of glass, single pane of glass or whatever with OneView. They've recently had an integration now with DataWare MIM. So I'm even more excited about it because at first it was a little clunkier to get my clients on it, but they've got that completed just recently.
Okay. So when I was looking at the Datto product, one of the things, so I started with, well, it wasn't SolarWinds at the time. I forget who it was in the beginning, but of course they went through all their changes and ended up as the, well, now they're Enable, so I shouldn't even say that. So the fact that everything is tightly integrated, you know, the RMM, the AV, the web protection, there's even backup. I use some of the backups for that, risk intelligence for reports and stuff. And there's a couple other things. So every time I look at a product like Datto RMM, the flexibility is one of the things that I'm like, okay, I need to look at the idea of if I'm not happy with the AV, maybe I can switch. Can't do that with the SolarWinds deal, but with Datto RMM, you can. So how have you found that in terms of have you picked, you know, a separate AV and web protection or DNS protection, whatever you're calling it there?
Well, for DNS protection, I use cleanbrowsing.org.
Okay.
And it's not integrated at all. I set the settings through, you know, my RMM, but I don't use, you know, the one that's integrated necessarily with Datto. Trying to think as far as the AV, I mean, I pretty much rely on Malwarebytes.
Okay.
Yeah. And Windows Defender, too. I mean, Windows Defender really is a great product, getting better all the time, especially, you know, if for my clients that are on Microsoft, Business Premium, the 365 Business Premium, you can add on some mobility and security with that. That's really powerful. So.
All right. Okay, so I've taken us way off track. So let's try to get back onto our topic, the power of no. So you were leading the discussion. What bullet point did we leave off on?
Oh, let's see. I think I have my little notes here. Well, this is still kind of, there were a few things I wanted to mention about saying no to opportunities and, okay. You know, in that saying no to a client. It's not an existing client. It's, you know, maybe somebody who's proposing, you know, wants to try to do business with you or thinks they might, or even like a break fix situation. I really pride myself on offering excellent service. And one of those things is that I always tried to be very responsive, you know, and respond very quickly to people. And what I found was, you know, there were times where I was just overwhelmed and I just couldn't get to something. But I was afraid to say no, you know, if somebody called and they needed me. And I'm not talking about like, you know, it's a major hard drive crash and you sort of have to drop everything and go with the most important fire at the time. But for whatever reason, it was something that I just really couldn't get to. And I was scared to say no because I, again, didn't want to turn down business. But in every case, I cannot think of one where I have said, you know, no, that it's worked out, that I've been, you know, that I lost business, I guess I should say. So every time that's happened and I've been nervous to say, you know, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to get to that until, and in every case they've said, oh, that's fine. It's no, you know, no rush whenever you can get to it, you know, or something similar. And so just that getting rid of that fear and having, you know, the confidence just to say, well, I'd really like to help you, but, and, you know, knowing that, yeah, I guess you might forego the business, but in every case, like I said, I haven't, their timeline was not what as urgent as what I was making it,
right. You know?
So that's a little lesson I've learned many times.
Now, has some of that become, and you know, a thing for you because they trust you and they're like, as long as you get to me, you know, as opposed to a customer who's calling and they're going to take the first person that responds.
Yeah.
I found that, you know, the longer a customer has been with me, the more bendable they are with their expectations.
Right. Yeah, there's some of that, certainly. And then a lot of times they just want to wait for you because they don't, I mean, they like you and they don't want to go to somebody else. And, you know, then I have some who, because I, you know, I have outsourced help desk when I need it. They fill in when I can't. And a lot of my clients will still say, well, that's okay, I'll wait till Diana can call, you know. Right. And so there's some of that, which is maybe good and maybe not. So. Okay.
All right.
But then you want me to move on to another topic?
That's up to you. It's your show.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, and we were talking about vendors. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, saying no to a vendor, it can be difficult because, you know, we have to be in sales, right, on our end, and we don't like to hear no. And so, you know, it's hard sometimes to say no to somebody. Had this kind of nice demo and conversations with somebody, and you really hate to tell them no, but you know, you have to do it because you can't certainly say no, say yes to everybody. Right. But I have found that in those situations, again, I can fall back on policies. Now, I've learned this the hard way. In a lot of my vendor purchases, I have, you know, made some mistakes and gotten, you know, like wished I had gone a different way or had difficult, you know, decided to move on and I had to get out of a contract, you know, that kind of thing. So I have rules now that I set just, you know, for my business, and I don't do business with a vendor unless they meet those policies. And so that makes no, in that case, a lot easier. It also helps with the conversation and we don't waste each other's time. You know, if you establish right up front, like, look, I don't do business with people who have a minimum or require me to sign a long-term contract. So if you all do that, then we can stop the conversation here. And so, you know, that's an easy way to say no. I think it's kind of softens it and it didn't waste people's time.
Okay. So. That is interesting because I know that, you know, I have to talk to vendors all the time and I tell a lot of them no. I don't have, you know, strict rules, but I am just honest in saying, look, here's what I have, and here's why I haven't switched in the past. And, you know, I need to be able to do this process in order to keep my customers humming. And if it's going to take me, you know, 5 more minutes per endpoint, that doesn't make sense if it's costing me the same amount of money, or even if you're saving me $1 an endpoint, you know,
right.
5 minutes per endpoint may not be worth that dollar. So that's how I do my evaluation. So very interesting. How many rules do you have, or how many points do you?
Well, there's just about 3. Okay. Like I said, like no long-term contracts. Being able to pay monthly.
Okay.
You know, that way, I mean, obviously, and I don't want to do a long-term contract because I want to be able to switch on at the drop of a hat if I decide a vendor isn't right for me anymore. I want to be able to just, you know, move my clients to a different product. And that's one thing I don't discuss specific products with my clients necessarily. You know, I say that I'm going to protect them with, you know, anti-malware and backup and all of that, but they don't really care about the brand. They know, you know, I assure them that they're going to be good quality products, but I may switch. And so I don't get locked into one particular one.
Right. Now, do you do the same thing with your customers? Do you allow them to do month to month with you, or do you have any of them that, you know, they sign up for a year or 3 years?
Well, my contract is a minimum of 4 months, and that's just because of onboarding.
Okay.
You know, it's, you know, there's some expense up front and just time and doing that. But after 4 months, they're free to leave. I mean, you know, and I mean, they can leave before that, but they'd have to just pay those 4 months. But yeah.
All right. That's a good one. I had 12 months, the initial contract, but then it's month to month after that. But I tell them, look, if it's really bad, we can break up. It's, you know.
Well, exactly. I mean, you don't want this bad relationship. That's no fun for anybody. So I figured if somebody doesn't want me, then I don't, you know, I don't want them to be stuck with me. Right. So I want to make it easy for them to leave. I hear so many stories of places where, you know, their stuff is held hostage, and that's just, that makes our industry look bad, I think.
So. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. All right. Any other rules for the vendors or any other ways that you might say no?
No, I can't really. That's kind of all I came up with on that, on the vendor side. Just, you know, I have been better about, you know, not doing demos. And one thing I also, if somebody approaches me on LinkedIn, but they just don't say anything, they just, you know, try to connect and don't give me a message. I mean, if it's a vendor kind of person, I usually don't connect because.
Oh, I'm glad you said yes to me.
Well, yeah, I mean, we would already established a relationship. That's different.
Which is odd because I usually don't friend people first or do the the connecting thing. I usually wait for people to find me.
Oh, you do? But, well, thank you.
But we've chatted. You're going to be on the show. I'm like, I think this is safe.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think we were already friends on Facebook, maybe. Yep, I think.
Yeah, and we've been friends for a while. I had to go back and look. I'm like, oh, we've been friends for a while.
Yeah. And then let's see, I think that was all vendors. And then, yeah, the only other thing, well, one thing I did want to mention, cause I feel like I'm, you know, I don't want to act like this is all my ideas, you know, this power of no thing. I mean, this is just something as I've been reading different books or listening to different, you know, tech influencers and people that, you know, I listen to and podcasts or whatever, I have heard this type of thing discussed and implemented it, like, you know, I really need to do that. I think most people probably listening to this podcast have probably heard of the Pumpkin Plan and Mike Michalowicz. So that's one of his things. I mean, one of his quotes is, you grow by saying no. And so, you know, it's not like I came up with this or anything,
right,
but I've been applying it, trying to learn and trying to implement it. And, you know, in fact, I have a little on my monitor here, the note that I have to remind myself is be quick to say no and be slow to say yes. And, I think that, you know, I have made far more far more bad decisions by saying yes than I ever have by saying no. So I think it's just, you know, I think it's good advice. I don't know. But the final kind of type of no I thought of is no to ourselves. I really love the problem solving part of what I do. And so I can get really bogged down in really trying to fix something and trying to solve the problem when maybe the best thing is, you know, like, for example, to wipe and reload because that's going to take care of it and they have a good backup. So, you know, it might be fun to chase that problem and figure it out, but it might not be the best business decision because it's a waste of time and you don't want to, you know, run up a big bill either when you don't need to.
Right.
So that, and then also knowing, especially I think for those of us who are by ourselves, knowing when to outsource and saying no to ourselves on, you know, we don't have to do everything. We can't do everything and we are not going to be good at doing everything. You know, there's things, you know, maybe accounting or whatever that is not our forte. And so outsourcing when we can, on that kind of thing. And then the final thing that I sometimes have a hard time saying no to are tools or toys because, you know, you see a gadget or you see an application and you think, oh, that's really, you know, I need that. And yeah, maybe you do, maybe you don't. But we, you know, if we're techie, we like that kind of stuff. And it's always fun to try out a new application, but it might not be the best choice to spend the money.
So you're saying you didn't run out and get the latest NetAlly Etherscope that I've been pitching here on the show?
No, I haven't done that.
Nope. All right. So saying no to self. Now, you mentioned, of course, going down the rabbit hole, trying to solve problems.
Yes.
So I usually give myself, depending on the problem, a certain amount of time. And I even set the timer sometimes.
That's a good idea.
And one of the funniest things is to watch a customer watch you set a timer, and they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, look, I got an hour to fix this.
Right.
I have two other appointments I got to get to, and if I can't fix this, we need to, you know, go to plan B or punt. Right. And you certainly don't want to pay me to just sit here and keep trying to figure this out. And they're like, well, you're right about that.
Right.
So yeah. I've done that. It's both liberating, because when the timer goes off, the customer then knows, oh, I guess we're done.
Yeah. You've exhausted all your resource on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good idea, because it's very easy to get down that rabbit hole and just spend more time, because it's, like I said, it's kind of fun. I enjoy it. I mean, I really do like the problem solving part.
Yeah. Well, it's easy too, because when you can tell them, look, this problem usually only takes 10 minutes to fix.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I can't keep, you know, I mean, I've already been here an hour. This should have been fixed. So obviously something is wrong. And like you said, if they've got good backups and you can, you know, rebuild a profile or something like that, you know, the Outlook issues are the worst.
Yes.
And, you know, spending all this time trying to get it to work, you know, just blow it out. It's 365. It syncs. Rebuild the profile.
Right.
And go.
Yeah. I mean, 365 with Microsoft, you know, Exchange online it's so much better now. Yes. I mean, I have so much fewer Outlook issues. And when I do have an Outlook issue, it's because somebody wants their other email in there. You know, they want this additional email address, Gmail or whatever. And Outlook is so much better, I think, now if you have a, you know, Microsoft 365 tenant with at least business standard. But, you know, most of mine, I try to get on business premium. So.
Okay. So that's kind of like your Mendoza line.
Yeah. I mean, I really, there's just so much there for small business. It's just a great, great, it's more than an application. I mean, it really gets, you know, it has infrastructure, you know, for them, and security. And so, if possible, that's where I start with Microsoft 365. Okay. And of course, those are for people I'm trying to get, you know, to the cloud and to be, you know, not have an on-prem server.
All right. So I'm sorry, a question just popped up in the chat and I was getting ready to ask you, do you use a vendor for your 365? Are you trying to be CSP or?
Well, I'm a Microsoft partner. I'm technically a CSP, but Pax8 is my provider, you know, my whatever distributor they call that.
All right. I want to get to Chris's question, but I do want to pop this up here. John made a comment a while back with nothing in it. So, John, you just contributed nothing to the show. So if you meant to write something, go ahead and put that back in. But Chris asked a question here. Being a one-person MSP, do you state you'll contact them or provide support within so many hours?
Yes. At least make contact within 4 hours. That's what's in my contract. Okay. But, you know, like I said, I do have help desk that fills in for me and answers my phones when I can't get to them, and even somewhat after hours. I mean, I do monitor after hours. My clients, you know, the way my contract is, I'll do after hours, but it's going to cost a lot more. It's not going to be within their service agreement. So they have to really need me for that.
Okay. So you put 4 hours. I don't put that in there. Everything is best effort.
Well, I think I'd have to look at it for sure, but I'm pretty sure it's something like we'll try within 4 hours. Okay. I mean, it's, you know, at least to make a contact.
Okay. You know. All right. We'll have to do another show and talk about all the specifics there, because you actually had a lot of stuff that we could have certainly gone off on some other tangents. So your stack and your rules, contract stuff, those are the things that people want to hear about.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things. It's expensive to get the contract done right.
Yes.
But it's important. So,
yep.
And one of my clients is my attorney, so that worked. It helps a little.
All right. And my attorney is here in my backyard, and I have him as a guest on the podcast from time to time, so that helps.
Yeah.
All right. So out of all of that, is there one thing that you would like to leave listeners with, or one takeaway that they should have about the power of no?
Well, I mean, really, I'm probably just repeating myself, but I think it's just to put that fear away, because we just really, I've proven it to myself over and over. We don't make good decisions when they're made out of fear. And I think there's a lot of fear when we are thinking we have to say no. And so that really would be it. I think that, like I said, I'm probably repeating myself. I think I probably said that before, but it's important. So,
all right. Things worth remembering are worth repeating, right?
True. That's true.
Okay. All right. So let's go ahead and transition our way out of here. If you are watching us live, Diana has agreed to join us after the break and do a little bit of post show. So don't run off just yet, but we are going to come to the part of the show where Florida Man or Random Question.
Okay. I'm going to try to compete with Florida Man with Oklahoma Man.
Okay. Here we go.
We'll see. Okay. So I'm not reading the entire story, but I'm reading the high points. So former Oklahoma County Commissioner Earl Rooms has been accused in a felony charge of unauthorized use of a Tinker Air Force Base tractor. In April, he confessed to taking the tractor without permission to plow his leased property. And he had access to that because he worked at Tinker Air Force Base in the security capacity, but he has since lost that job. And a base employee put a GPS tracker on the New Holland Farm tractor on April 1st because it repeatedly went missing. He said the tractor would just randomly show back up and never where it had last been seen. So they put the tracker on it, and it was moved. The gentleman moved it, and they tracked it down. And he said he was only borrowing it, but he's been charged. So,
oh, they didn't find out, like, what he was doing? What type of tractor was it?
Well, it said a New Holland farm tractor.
Well, I don't know what that means. I'm from Florida.
Well, I know. I mean, I'm not a farm expert, but I think it was, like, the kind you can just, like, excavate your property with and move things around.
Okay. Because, I mean, it's got to be for a reason. You're going to take that, do some work, and then bring it back, right?
Right, right. I think he had an acreage or something, and he was, you know, moving trees or, you know, moving dirt. I don't know. It didn't go into that.
Okay. All right. So the gentleman who randomly used the tractor from Tinker Air Force Base, that's the name of the Air Force Base?
Yes. Yes. And the funny thing, I thought he was 80 years old. Thought that was, he's a former commissioner. I mean, he was a commissioner a long time ago, but
wow. He was probably, running it back to the nursing home. Hey, ladies, check out my tractor.
Yeah, I don't know. So right. I don't know if that competes with that Florida Man story you had, but that's what I got.
Now, the fact that he was 80 and stealing a tractor, that's pretty good. So yeah. We'll have to get the link for that. What was it? A New Holland.
Yeah, New Holland farm tractor. That's what the...
New...
And I like the base employee that put the GPS tracker on it. That's pretty smart.
That is true. Well, so it's either put the GPS on it or have somebody man the tractor, right?
Right, yeah.
Those things aren't cheap either. New Holland four-wheel drive tractor, $150,000.
Ooh, yeah, so.
Yeah, I'd put a GPS.
Yeah, it wasn't just one of those little donkey things, so.
There should be like a barracks just for the tractor. All right. All right, so that is going to do it for this episode of PodNuts Pro. Everybody, thank you very much. Diana Giles from Skyline IT Management. And this has been a very informative show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. We are going to continue on here, folks, through the break as we end off the podcast portion. Remember, TechCon Unplugged coming up September 17th through the 19th. Head over to TechCon Unplugged and get your tickets. And if you're keeping track and if you are on schedule with the podcast next week, we will have my good friends, Jason Miller and Tom Bull, on the show. And I don't know if that is the last Summer Tech series or not, but that should be a very engaging show. We hope to all see you then. And as a matter of fact, Tom Bull with a very good Thanks, Diana. So there you go.
Thank you.
All right, that's going to do it, folks. If you're watching live, stay with us through the break. For everybody else, thank you for listening, downloading, and following PodNuts Pro. Check us out on YouTube and the Facebook and over at podnutspro.com. That's going to do it. And until next time, holla.